You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program to put some money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Television Network. We've got a stack deck, full house, baby. Super Bowl 52 countdown is on. Steve Merrill steps up and in. We'll talk Super Bowl. We'll talk Super Bowl props. We'll talk NBA basketball with Steve Merrill. Donnie Wrightside joins us. Donnie Wrightside's been killing it all year long. Donnie steps up and in. He's a massive Philadelphia Eagle fan. We'll talk exclusively Super Bowl 52. Cody Saftick joins me in studio. No Super Bowl talk with Cody. We talk MMA with Cody Saftick. And Cody's an MMA encyclopedia. We've got UFC on Fox, free card on Fox on Saturday night. We have some Bellator going down this evening, I guess, on, what is it, the Paramount Network? I don't know. I guess it used to be Spike. Now it's Paramount. Whatever. Bellator on the docket. We'll have a Bellator pick or two for you in our Plays of the Day segment. So the countdown is on, Super Bowl 52. What's going on this weekend? Well, this weekend it's All-Star Weekend, man. It's All-Star Weekend. College football. We got the Senior Bowl. And if anyone's paid attention this week to the Senior Bowl, it's basically the Baker Mayfield show. And too many red flags, man. This kid's got more flags than the United Nations does. All right? I don't want any part of him. I've sort of wavered on him. I used to really not like him. I used to think he was kind of a punk. And, like, he, you know, the next coming of Johnny, if not worse. And it's funny because he goes, no, I'm not Johnny Manziel. You know, I'm my own guy. And then he's like, well, I might not play in the Senior Bowl. So basically, Baker Mayfield goes to the Senior Bowl, has a couple of good practices, and then wants to go home because he doesn't want to screw it up and play in a game. Like, that's going to instill confidence in NFL coaches and general managers. But word on the street is he could be top 10. But it's interesting. The northern side, all right, in the Shrine game here, the north versus the south. The north is stacked, man. They got Luke Falk from Washington State. I don't know why Tanner Lee's on the team. Tanner Lee's not, you know, really, from Nebraska. But you got Josh Allen and you got Baker Mayfield all on the north, man. All right, all on the north. It's insane in the Senior Bowl. The south, they got, like, the kid from Virginia, Kurt Benkert. They got, like, a kid from Richmond and, you know, Kyle, you know, Loretta type of stuff or whatever the hell his name is. You know, they got a bunch of no-names. Mike White, the quarterback from Western Kentucky. On the southern side. But I tell you what, I think it's a trap. But that's just, you know, that's just the beginning of it. We got the Pro Bowl this week. The Pro Bowl used to be automatic overs. It's slowed down over the last couple of years, but I think we can get there. I can tell you that I do like the NFC in the Pro Bowl. And then we get to the NHL All-Star game, which, I don't know. I mean, it's the divisions versus the divisions, and it's three on three. And then the coaches put on boxing gloves, and they fight. And then, I don't know, then the ice girls have, like, fastest ice girl competition. And they add up all the results. And then, I don't know. Oh, God. And, oh, yeah, if you need a reason to tune in, Kid Rock. Get your Confederate flag out. Put your MAGA hat on. Like, you really, the NHL, a league known for being the whitest freaking league in the world, thinks it's a good idea to hire Kid Rock. You know, it's funny. I bitched about Kid Rock, actually. I bitched a lot about Kid Rock singing the national anthem, and somebody sent me a tweet and called me a snowflake liberal. Said, all you snowflake liberals are upset about Kid Rock. I said, no. I said, hockey fans and music fans are upset about Kid Rock, all right? Don't bring politics into this. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Another day that we get closer to Super Bowl 52, and another day that we're jam-freaking-packed on the program as well. Three guests on the show again. Cody Saftick will join us in studio a little bit later on this evening. We'll talk UFC on Fox, free card on Fox Television Saturday night. We'll talk Bellator. Got some Bellator on the board this evening. We've got Donnie Wrightside joining us from Philadelphia, and Donnie's smoking hot this year. He's been crushing the books, and he's in a good mood because he's been crushing the books, and his Philadelphia Eagles are going to the Super Bowl. Me and Donnie Wrightside will be kicking it live from Costa Rica next weekend online. We'll give you more information about that. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/SportsRage. Steve Merrill bats leadoff. One of the covers, experts, covers.com, and, of course, prosportsinfo.com. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, Gabe, doing well.
So the countdown is on, Steve. We're now, 9 days away from Super Bowl 52. The number really hasn't moved all that much. There was a $1 million bet earlier in the week, and people say, oh, big money in this, but big money doesn't necessarily mean sharp money. And I reminded people during the World Series with the Dodgers and the Astros, there was all kinds of crazy bets coming in on both sides, and then there was like some massive line movement on the series price, on a game price, and people are like, oh, it's sharp money. And it was really a furniture mattress guy, a store owner from Houston, who got in over his head, and it was going to cost him basically $5 million in mattresses. He said, if the Astros win the World Series, I'll give away X amount of mattresses, 3,000, whatever the hell it was. And it was going to cost him $5 million, but the insurance only went up to like $3 million on it. So he was in the hole for $2 million if they were going to win. So he went to Vegas, and a smart guy, he bet the other side. He hedged it. He hedged the bet on the other side. And then people are like, oh, sharp money and massive line move. It was just a furniture guy, Steve. It wasn't sharp money.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, all you got to do, too, is look at the public consensus. I mean, the public is all over the Eagles so far. It's over 60% at covers.com. And that's always a red flag because, as you know, favorites usually get about 60% on the blind. It doesn't necessarily mean the public's wrong. I mean, the Eagles could win the game, but it's always unusual to see that much public action on the Eagles, and that's why the line's been dropping. And the other reason, of course, is because if you look how the games played out last Sunday, the look-ahead line when the NFC game kicked off was going to be 6.5, 7, and the Eagles blow out the Vikings, and all of a sudden it opens 5.5, and now it's down to 5, even 4.5 in a lot of locations as the money's definitely been coming on the underdog. And, one big bet for the Super Bowl means nothing because a lot of people come out of the woodwork and recreationally make big bets this time of year.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. The real flurry is in the last 48 hours, actually. I mean, the casual fan's not betting the Super Bowl yet. I got to tell you, I haven't bet the Super Bowl yet. You know, I'd like to start clicking some of these props right now, but my money's in action tonight. And I think most casual bettors are in the same boat. So maybe there was some so-called, professional money that comes in early on this stuff. Maybe some people have like casually bet it. But for the most part, Steve, the real flurries in the last 48 hours. The Saturday night and then into the Sunday morning, that's when people really start betting the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, the public hasn't played it too much, but the fact that the public likes the underdog, they probably have played Philly if they've played it. But more importantly, the sharp money knows what side the public is going to be on. So if they also like Philadelphia, it would make sense for them to play it early this week because the line most likely will drop next weekend when the majority of the bets come in from the public, who once again looks like they're going to be on the underdog. I mean, the one reason you maybe didn't want to play plus 5.5 is because 6 is somewhat of a key number. If you liked Philly, maybe wait to try to get 6 or more, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen, and I think the sharp money realized that, and that's probably why they played this game early, and knowing that the public will probably be on the underdog next week, and as you said, when most of that money comes in.
Yeah, and the number is set right now with the expectation that Gronkowski will play.
Right.
So, if it's not really, maybe it goes up to 5.5, but the odds makers have the expectation, and I think the public does as well. No one really is walking around saying, oh, is Gronk going to play? One thing I find interesting here, and I've got the results for the last 8 Super Bowls when it comes to prop results in front of me. And, Steve, when it comes to the coin toss, and I'm not talking about betting on the coin toss itself, but what do teams do when they win the coin toss? And it's amazing. 7 of the last 8 Super Bowls, and including 7 in a row, so the last 7 Super Bowls, we have to go all the way back to New Orleans and Indianapolis' Super Bowl, that a team took the ball, Steve, in a Super Bowl. Every freaking team has deferred. New England, Atlanta. Atlanta won the coin toss, deferred. Denver, Carolina. Carolina won the coin toss, deferred. New England, Seattle. Seattle won the coin toss, deferred. Seattle and Denver. Seattle won and deferred. And then Peyton Manning, and they gave up the safety on the first play. Baltimore, San Francisco. Baltimore won the coin toss, deferred. New England and New York. New England won the coin toss, deferred. Green Bay Packers, Pittsburgh Steelers, Green Bay Packers won the coin toss, deferred. It's amazing, Steve. 7 straight times the teams have deferred here.
Yeah, not a surprise. I mean, I didn't have the exact numbers, but I would have been pretty certain it was pretty close to that because it makes no sense why you wouldn't defer. It's a huge advantage, I think, to start the second half with the ball. Coaches realize that. And then Belichick's mindset in general is usually that way. He's a defensive coach, and he's been in a good amount of those Super Bowls. So it's hard to find that prop anymore for that reason. But I'd be surprised if both teams don't defer. I mean, Peterson, a little bit of an X factor, I guess, because he's a new coach. But it's just the right strategy move in the NFL. And the only time I think you want to take the ball is if you're a high-flying offense with a terrible defense and try to get out fast. But that doesn't really apply to either team. Both teams are, you know, capable of stopping the other one.
Yeah, as you stated, though, Belichick's a weird dude. You can never really
– That is true.
You lock it in. But it gets into which team is going to score first. And I find it interesting that the New England Patriots have never scored a point in the first quarter with Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, yet they're minus 150 to score first. And I think there's actually just sort of value with Philadelphia in the sense that, to me, it's kind of a random pick'em type of event, Steve. But I got to believe at minus 150 that the odds makers do believe that the Patriots are going to get the damn ball first somehow.
Yeah, I mean, in the team that gets the ball first, if they don't move it very well, it actually sets the other team up with a better chance to score. And these are two decent defensive teams. I think the Patriots' defense, you know, a little misleading. They give up a lot of yards, but they never give up points. But that's always how they've been for years now, bend but don't break. Eagles statistically are one of the better defenses in the league. Patriots, of course, a very good offense, though. But if you don't march down and get several first downs, you're actually giving the other team the ball near midfield and giving them a better chance to score first. So it's a tough one to predict. I think that whole New England first quarter thing is really interesting. Once again, we talked about it on Monday, how the Patriots, of all their dominance, you know, they've barely won any Super Bowls by a margin. And in fact, they haven't won any Super Bowls by a margin with Tom Brady. And yet again, showing that they start very slow, and you wouldn't expect that from the team with so much experience and so much, you know, know-how in the Super Bowl.
Now, here's another interesting prop that's flying under the radar. First offensive play of the game, run or pass. And I'm surprised at the discrepancy here in the number, in which the first play of the game run is minus 163. First play of the game, offensive play of the game, pass, plus 120. Yet in the last eight Super Bowls, it's amazing. Everybody passes. Everybody's passed. I mean, last year, pass. So it's last three years, pass. The year before, Seattle and Denver, Peyton Manning was trying to pass, Steve. This snap went over his head. You know, so that would have been a pass. But that was a safety in the first play of the game. First offensive play of the game. Baltimore, San Francisco, pass. New England, you know, so basically we have two. So it's 5-2-1 to the pass, Steve, in the last 8 years, including four of the last five with a pass, with the exception of a safety. But what, like I said, Peyton Manning was in the shotgun then. He was going to pass the ball.
Yeah, what's interesting also, a prop that I've used several times over the years, I came up with this one about 15 years ago and cashed with it for several years. People kind of caught on, but will the first pass be complete? And I used to always take the yes. It was always minus money. But the reason it works so well is because they normally do throw the ball early on either first or second down. They normally do a very short, safe pass. And that's another reason why the under in the first quarter, the under in the first half always works, because teams don't want to make that mistake early. They come out very conservative, and New England seems to do that quite often. So I like them to throw the ball first. I can see them doing a quick pass. I think where the run could come into play is if Philadelphia starts with the ball. You know, they probably don't want to put Nick Foles in a dangerous situation on the first play. I could see them handing off. But there again, they like to do the little short passes as well. Foles is pretty good at that. So there's definitely some value of plus money on the pass, especially if the Patriots get the ball first, then it's probably favored.
And I'll tell you one thing, too. Doug Peterson is a pretty – he likes to gamble. I mean, he'll take chances. Last week, Doug Marrone got conservative, and he played it by the book. And you can beat some teams playing it by the book, but you're not going to beat the New England Patriots. Like, you have to do by the book and then sort of think outside the box and mix it up a bit. You know, you really have to go for the jugular with these guys. So what have you looked at so far, Steve, when it comes to the props? What catches your eye?
Well, one thing that catches my eye is that a lot of the major offshore books still don't have them up, and I think they just came out in Vegas today, basically. You know, so they're really taking their time putting these out. I don't blame them. You know, the only people that are playing them this early in the week are obviously sharps who are looking for mistakes. So I feel like every year, you know, it's later and later that the props are up. But I think the same theories that we've talked about always works out. Teams come out early and conservative. Like, you know, first half unders are worth a look. We saw that in the Alabama-Georgia game. The game was 13-0 at halftime, and it ends up going over because of overtime. Same thing last year. That Patriots game goes over because of overtime as well. You know, the total right now is sitting at 48. I've seen some 48 in the halves out there. The public looks like they're going to be on the over. I would expect that number to rise higher. But once again, if you're looking to play the under, I think you want to look at some of the props instead of the game itself, because strange things always happen in these Super Bowls, especially in the second half.
All right, we got to be quick on the way out here. We got the Rockets and the Pelicans on the board tonight. The Pelicans playing some good basketball, actually. You know what? They're 10-1 against the spread as division home dogs as well. That's a pretty impressive number. That's hard to ignore tonight, Steve, getting 4.5. The Rockets are a good team, but it's up to 4.5 now.
Yeah, they're a live home dog. I mean, Houston's playing on a back-to-back road set after three straight home games. I think that's a negative. Rockets defense giving up almost 38% shooting from three-point range on the road. Meanwhile, the Pelicans offense is shooting over 50% from the field at home this year, and they're 6-1 straight up their last seven games, so there's no question. And by the way, that one loss came by a single point, so they're definitely a live dog.
All right, so the biggest fade in the NBA has been the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they're laying 6 tonight. I'm tempted, you know, I want to take the Pacers. You almost have to just take the Pacers, you know, any over. But are the Cavs ever going to cover a spread? I mean, they've covered 12 times. They're on pace to be the worst ATS team in NBA history, actually.
Yeah, yet they're still the favorite to win the Eastern Conference. Isn't that crazy? I mean, so we're getting a team that's favored to win the East laying just 6 points at home. I think maybe we're starting to get some line value now. Now, I took a shot with them against Orlando a couple weeks ago, and they were a 10-point favorite. They're up by 23 in the first half, and they only ended up winning by a point. So that's what you're dealing with here. I mean, they're definitely sleepwalking, but I still feel like they're more than 6 points better than Indiana on their home court.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, they're 2-17 against the spread in their last 19 games. Amazing, man. You just get rich betting against these guys. I bet against the Cavs on a nightly basis now, but I actually did have them against Orlando as well, and I was feeling smart earlier in the night when they were killing them, but that fell apart. 76ers and Spurs should be an interesting basketball game tonight in San Antonio. I wouldn't mind taking the Sixers, but I'm having a hard time making the plunge.
Who would have thought a year or two ago that San Antonio would only be a 3.5-point home favorite over Philadelphia? The Sixers are playing solid basketball, though. They've won 8 of their last 10 games straight up. They've also covered 8 of those last 10 games against the spread. Spurs, meanwhile, off back-to-back wins after back-to-back losses. They're kind of like Cleveland. You feel like they're just kind of sleepwalking their way through the regular season. They know what they have to do to win. But keep in mind, they are still 20-3 straight up at home this year. Sixers just 11-12 on the road versus 12-9 at home. So, you know, once again, we got a team that's 20-3 straight up at home, laying basically just a basket. It's pretty interesting.
You know, last night was a very high-scoring night in the NBA. We'll see if it continues that theme. This stuff's usually contagious if it's going to be a defense optional, you know, defense optional night tonight. One team that's just smoking to the over as of late is the New York Knicks, says Steve. I think it's, what, 9-1 to the over now in the last 10 games or so. 10-1.
Yeah, the other thing jumps up. Also, I think dogs had covered like 45 out of 50 the other night at some point. Somebody sent me the numbers. I don't keep track of that stuff specifically, but one of my clients said he tracked it at 45-5, which is really amazing if it's anything close to that underdog run going into like Wednesday, I think.
Well, it's not. You know what? I did a piece last week, and I told people the best bet in the NBA this year is road dogs.
Right.
There's a misconception. People think, oh, you know, home teams in the NBA. It's 54% now. Well, that's high 50. It's like 53.9 or so, which is actually a pretty significant ledger, really, in the gaming world. You know, you don't get it that high, but road underdogs has been the best bet in the NBA. All right, Steve, so we got to get out of here. Check out SteveCoversExperts.com. Thanks for the time, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us. Donnie Wrightside's going to join us next. You know, he's going to be fired up for the Super Bowl. I look forward to his take. Donnie Wrightside joins us next. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Super Bowl 52 countdown continues as well. We're now joined by a man who's a lifelong diehard Philadelphia Eagle fan, and he's also a diehard handicapper that crushed the books this year as well. Donnie Wrightside, you can find him on Twitter at WrightsideVP. You can watch him on SportsbookReview.com's YouTube page on a daily basis. And me and Donnie will be kicking it live in Costa Rica throwing it down next week, a beach bash for the Super Bowl. And I tell you what, Donnie, forget about the Mall of America in Minneapolis. I think you're in paradise. You got your team playing in a Super Bowl, and you're going to be drinking, you know, drinks with, like, umbrellas in them in the sun, you know, on the beach in Costa Rica. Doesn't get better than that.
They had no cocktails, you know, some cigars, and also gave a lot of people, family members, close to me, saying, how can you go out of the country when the Philadelphia Eagles are going to be playing in the Super Bowl game? And I answer the one thing, and the one thing only, that us as gamblers with superstitions have. In 2004, Gabe, I watched this same game right from Southern New Jersey, and we got beaten that football game. Time to change it up if we want to win.
Yeah, and it's, you know what? You're not the type, Donnie. I don't picture you. If they won, I don't picture you climbing the light poles and stuff like that anyways, right? So
yeah, no Crisco for me over here. I'll be okay.
Yeah, you'd be at home anyways watching the game. I mean, you know what's funny, actually? Kitchener Ranger Ray, who's he's a regular in the chat over at SBR, a regular viewer of the show here on Fantasy. He's a diehard Eagle fan. He's going to be on vacation in Jamaica. And he's loving it. He's like, man, I'm going to be watching it at a beach bar, like in a pool bar and stuff, you know, with my Eagle gear on. You know, I had nothing wrong with that, man. You know, Super Bowl in paradise, and even better, they got a betting window. We'll be able to bet at the kiosk.
I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, we'll be on the air live during the entire game, going over everything, the punches. We even get a little Justin Timberlake, Gabe. How lucky are we?
That's the bad part. That's the bad part. So, listen. This game, I said earlier, and you do the judge Donnie decides. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But I said earlier in the week, this game is like a Supreme Court case. I really think there's legitimate arguments can be made on both sides. But the more I analyze it, I'm starting to just see more arguments on the Philadelphia Eagles side. Now, one thing I want to put out there, guys, and you and I talk about this often, and specifically this year in the NFL, it came into play as well, in which point spreads generally don't matter. It's a perception in our head that we have. It's like a fake insurance. Well, I'm getting this point spread. So specifically in the Super Bowl, Donnie, the winning team, man, 43-6-2. 43-6-2. So to put it in layman's terms for you guys, basically only six times did a team lose the Super Bowl and cover the point spread. Like, you pick the winner. You say who's going to win the game. So basically, if you like Philadelphia, history says we don't need the 5 points. They're probably just going to win, or they'll lose and they won't cover the number. But where it gets tricky, Donnie, is the fact that the New England Patriots, out of the six times, these son of a bitches have actually won a Super Bowl three times and not covered.
No, you're right about that. Those seven games that they play, Gabe, I mean, when you look at it, the biggest winning margin they've had, Gabe, 6 points.
Yeah.
And that was an overtime game last year. You're right.
In a game that was as close, the biggest margin of victory is a game that they barely won and saved their ass in overtime. And the other one, Donnie, the other one was 4 points, and it was Seattle threw the ball in on the 1 yard line. Every other win. So, yeah, they've never won a Super Bowl by more than 6 points. So we get into that. But then we get into the defense aspect of it here. The team with the better defense has won 6 of the last 7 Super Bowls. The team with the better defense has won 42 of 51 Super Bowls, higher ranked defense. And I don't think it's any secret that the Philadelphia Eagles have the better defense. I mean, you know, we look at the style of play that the Philadelphia Eagles play on offense, and I think they're going to give the New England Patriots defense fits. They're unpredictable. They go left, they go right, they throw, they run. They don't really lock in and key in on anyone, and my X factor is LeGarrette Blount. I really believe LeGarrette Blount's going to have a big game next week.
No, Gabe, I can see your point of view on that, because when you usually think about Patriots football, Gabe, Bill Belichick, staunch defense. Now, is their defense good? Of course it's good. But even going back, Gabe, as an Eagle fan, watching in 2004 the Super Bowl, I don't take much out of it. I just like to correlate it, though, when you're looking overall at teams and game plans. Look at the front seven right now that the New England Patriots have. It just seems like it's a bunch of guys out there. Look at the front seven from back in the day in 2004. Vrabel, Brewski, Willie McGinnis, Richard Seymour, Ty Warren, a young Vince Wilfork, Keith Traylor, Randall Gay in the secondary, Asante Samuel, Rodney Harrison back then. They don't have these type of players. They do have a good secondary, however, New England. And, of course, you have Bill Belichick. He has 2 weeks to game plan for this. That's a major advantage. But when it all boils down to it, Gabe, I think the Eagles' defense, the way you get after it, the way teams have beat this New England Patriots team, Gabe, the front four pass rush without having to bring 6 and 7 rushers up there. The Eagles have that formula similar, Gabe, to what the New York Giants were doing to them previously.
No, you're exactly right. And if you look at Jacksonville did a lot of things right last week, Donnie. But, you know, one of the reasons I said, too, I said, I think they're going to have a hard time keeping their concentration, though, for 3.5 hours and 60 minutes of football. They're a young, aggressive, violent, emotional team, and it caught up to them, and they started to unravel a little bit. Philadelphia is not a young team. I mean, they're not. That's the thing. Oh, how are Philadelphia going to handle the big stage? LeGarrette Blount's played in Super Bowls. Alshon Jeffrey's been in the league a long time. Nick Foles is 30 years old. Like, they're not kids. You go down the list of players. They got veterans on the team. I think they handle the moment well. And if you look from a style of football, Donnie, the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Philadelphia Eagles are very similar teams, but the Eagles are just better than the Jags are. You know, like, they can both do a lot of the same things defensively. The Eagles can get after the pass rush. They can create pressure, get in Brady's face. And I like the fact that they have the ground game and the offensive line. I doubted, Donnie, whether they could push the Minnesota Vikings around in the trenches. I mean, that drive in the fourth quarter against the Falcons, they ate up the 8 minutes. It won the football game for them. And everyone in this damn stadium knew they're giving it the blood, and they couldn't stop at the Falcons. I didn't think you could blow the Vikings off the ball. They did. And I do believe they'll be able to blow a Patriot team off the ball that gives up over 4.7 yards a rush.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you, Gabe, because even when you look at the Minnesota game, what do you know Minnesota's strength and tendencies are? The front seven, fast and physical. You can't get around us. You can't run through us. The Eagles did exactly that. The one thing that gives you hope also, Gabe, when you're talking about this game being in a dome, outdoors, cold weather, windy, Tom Brady handles all that and handles it fine. Nick Foles, we've seen heading down the stretch, you know, the Cowboys game only had a couple series, but the Oakland game, really cold games where he struggled. It's going to be in a dome. There'll be no throwing problems here. And again, getting back to the front seven from New England, Gabe, good point bringing up the Eagles offensive line. They should be able to do whatever they want. There's no star players like a Khalil Mack out there that you have to worry about getting after the pass rusher. The Eagles should have time to throw, and I think they will have some success in that.
Yeah, and how do you beat Tom Brady? You keep him on the sidelines. Who leads the NFL in time of possession this year? The Philadelphia Eagles.
Yep, what a contrast between Doug Peterson and Chip Kelly there.
Yeah, and exactly. Actually, they led in time of possession last year, too, 2 years running since Doug Peterson's been there. And nice that you're going to get to wear your home greens, 15-3 in those jerseys the last 2 years.
Yes, not a big fan of the white-on-white Eagles, so the Patriots did us a service there. Glad to see the green back.
Exactly. So Patriots have never scored a single point in the first quarter of seven Brady Super Bowls. A lot of people are talking about that right now. I'm looking at the first quarter under 9.5. I like that, Donnie. A couple of field goals, hey, I'm still there. Yeah, a touchdown and a field goal beats me. You know, two field goals, you know, I'm good. Three field goals, I'm good. I think it's a feeling out process. I actually am kicking. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody scored on the opening drive and kicked three, but it doesn't mean it's going to go over 9.5. And like I said, the Patriots have never scored a damn point in the first quarter of a Super Bowl with Tom Brady, and we've seen them be slow starters against Tennessee, and they were slow starters against Jacksonville as well. I like the under 9.5 in the first quarter. It's one of the props that I've already given out.
Yeah, no, I agree with you as well. I mean, the slow starts, I always like these big game type of environments, especially Super Bowls. You have the 2 week break there. You have all the buildup. It's exciting. You know, a lot of butterflies out there. I agree with you. The first half usually is going to be a little bit lower scoring. But also, if you're looking from a dog standpoint there, we all know Tom Brady at the end of the football game, Tom Brady getting it going in the fourth quarter. But Tom Brady in the Super Bowls, even dating back to the first game the Eagles played with them in 2004, slow starters, ties at half, losing, going into halftime, and then regrouping. The one joke we always make in Philadelphia, Gabe, is that now they can't go in there and have the Zapruder film and break down all our signals on the sidelines. If you're looking for another angle, take the Eagles. You're probably getting a field goal or even more to the 3.5 in the first half. It's not a bad bet.
I saw there's another number out here, Donnie. So 20 of the last 24 quarterbacks to win the Super Bowl. Last 24 years, 20 of the quarterbacks that won had a regular season quarterback rating of 92.50 or better. Now, Tom Brady did this year. Nick Foles was in the mid-50s. Yet in the playoffs, it's like 122, you know, 121.9 or whatever. So which one does he have? And I'm saying he has the playoff one. Because those regular season games, you mentioned it, bad weather, and they didn't mean anything. The Eagles weren't playing for anything. It was bad weather. I can't hold it against them. Yeah. Did he look pedestrian and crap against the Raiders on that Christmas night? Yes. It was Christmas night in the rain. You know what I mean? In a meaningless football game. I don't know. I mean, he just joined Joe Montana as the only quarterback in NFL history to complete 75% or more of his passes in both playoff games. So I put him in that ledger. I'm not looking at him like a quarterback rating of 55. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. He's not going to have that perfect game again, but, you know, when you look at Nick Foles, are we getting regular season Nick Foles or are we getting playoff Nick Foles?
Yeah, no, good point, Gabe, because if you go all the way back to early in training camp here, if you remember, he missed a good portion, 2 to 3 weeks of training camp with elbow problems. Then you come into the season and you sort of settle back into your mold, Gabe, as the backup quarterback. Carson Wentz is the star, MVP of the league. You're working primarily with the scout team. Then all of a sudden you're thrust into that New York Giants game as the starter. You have to come in and come back from, what, 2 touchdowns deficit at halftime. Then you get to work with the first team starters for the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, and you see the progressive week. Getting better every week. Was awful against Oakland. Had 2 or 3 series versus Dallas. But you had a full 2 weeks on that bye week to get better. Looked much better in the second half for Atlanta and had a fantastic game versus Minnesota. He's locked and loaded in playoff mode. Is he going to out-duel Brady? I don't know. But he's certainly going to be good enough to win this football game for the Eagles.
Donnie, have you kicked the tire on the props at all? Anything catch your eye that I haven't brought up? You know what? I like the over 4.5 sacks. Mm-hmm. 6 of the last 7 Super Bowls, it's gone over the number, actually. It's 4.5. They've averaged 5.5 sacks. I actually like the over in the sacks. I like more points scored in the second half than the first half, but anything catch your eye?
Yeah, actually, got 3 quick ones here, Gabe. Outcome of the first challenge by a coach's challenge to be successful. The reason I bring this up, because I'm a big conspiracy guy. You know, when you're in your home stadium, you might play with the feed in the coach's box, or we couldn't get a good look at it here. At least the NFL is going to be able to come in and regulate both coaching boxes. And also, if you're looking early in the game, a 7 or 8 yard gain, it's the Super Bowl. The coaches will challenge that. So there's going to be a high reward for the coaches to have an overturn. So the first time a challenge by a coach, I do have a successful game. That's at minus 120.
Nice.
Team that scores first, Gabe, to win, I have that as a no because it's going to pay off at 175 right now. So I'm saying, you know, field goal down by the Eagles or the Patriots, long game. I'll take the bonus there on that as well. And then also the last one, Gabe, being the ultimate conspiracy theorist I am, the first penalty to be committed will be to the Eagles at minus 135. We all know the Patriots and the refs, Gabe. They're going to tilt that to the Eagles side. First play, probably a holding penalty, Gabe, on the Eagles. I'll take that.
I love it. It's the Alex Jones prop special, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I love where you're going with this, Donnie. I really do. I didn't think that's why I was looking forward to having you on, and you threw me something I didn't think of. You're damn right. They're going to screw Philadelphia first. New England would have to shoot someone, like we saw last week. I like where you're going with that. Philadelphia to have the first penalty of the game. We got to get out of here. We'll speak one more time, Donnie, here. We'll lock in some picks next week for the Super Bowl. Thanks for joining us.
So much fun, Gabe. Take care, buddy.
There's Donnie Wrightside with us. Check him out on a daily basis over at sportsbookreview.com. Me and Donnie do a lot of work together online as well. Cody Saftick joins us next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morency. All right, it's deja vu all over again. It's like last Friday. We had Cody Saftick in studio. We got Cody Saftick in studio once again. UFC on Fox, live from Charlotte, North Carolina. Saturday evening, afternoon, into the night. You know, that's one good thing. It's, you know, pay-per-view start at 10 o'clock on Fox. The main card started at 8 o'clock. So it's a little bit earlier. We also have some Bellator going down tonight as well. So, Cody, let's break down some fights. Let's start off with the main event with Jacare and Derek Brunson, which is a rematch from the Strikeforce days in which Jacare beat him.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know that it's going to play out the exact same way with Jacare getting a quick finish, but I see a lot of people jumping on Team Brunson here, saying how good Brunson's looked lately, how, you know, his punching power is almost second to none for the division. He does have a lot of power, but I just can't get behind him. I think this is the type of card that you look at it, and there's no readily available underdogs that are just jumping off at you, so you'll want to jump on the hype of somebody. You look at Brunson, the improvements he's made. Jacare is definitely getting a little bit older. He's coming off that knockout loss to Whitaker. It's almost like it writes itself. I don't see it happening that way. The guy's made a lot of improvements in the striking department. I think he's good enough to stave off that early attack of Brunson. And that's the thing with Brunson. He's going to bull rush you. He's either going to knock you out or he's going to die trying. And I just think he's going to die trying. If the fight hits the ground, we all know it's Jacare's domain. So his wrestling advantage, Brunson's wrestling advantage, throw it out the window. Striker versus striker, one guy's going to bull rush him, which is what Brunson does. And Jacare's going to look to hold on, survive, and rally. I think he rallies. The over 1.5, I think we briefly talked about that. That's not bad either, right? Because Brunson's going to lay it all out, probably get finished sometime in the second round. So it probably goes over that 1.5. But it's risky because the way this guy fights, I mean, you look at the guys that he's taken out, he's kill or be killed. And more times than not, he kills. It's just, I'm feeling Jacare to get one over for the old dogs here.
You know, you're not driven by the revenge and the rematch factor at all. And the fact that was in 2012.
Yeah.
You know, it was 5 years ago. And I would say that Derek Brunson has improved. And, you know, I said earlier in the week, I've always sort of looked at Derek Brunson as just sort of another guy.
Yeah,
you know,
sort
of like an OSP. Tough guy, you know, but you're okay. You're an athletic dude, powerful. But you know, I got to give him credit. I mean, he's worked on his craft. He's become a more complete fighter. He's a much better fighter now than he was 5 years ago. And Jacare, to me, is the same fighter, if not with a little bit more wear and tear. And Jacare's stand-up isn't great. He got stubborn, and I think he convinced himself that it was okay, and then he can get in trouble that way. I think it's a tough fight, you know, and the number keeps coming down, though, right? Yeah, like you said, the Brunson, and if you read all the MMA sites, Brunson's the it guy this week, right? Oh, if he wins
Brunson, yeah. They love Brunson, and I just can't really get behind him. First of all, we know Jacare is a little older, but Brunson's no spring chicken himself. He's like 34 years old, just about to be
38 versus 34.
Yeah, so he's not exactly all that young, but he's had this tendency his entire career that he sticks his chin way up in the air and he rushes in.
He's got that.
If you want to counter him, you can counter him. But remember last week we were talking about how a lot of people wanted Francis Ngannou. You were on Francis Ngannou, but what I was saying for that fight was that he looks good, he knocks out some guys, but who are these guys? That was my big argument. When you look at Brunson, he's killing these guys, but you know, he beat Sam Alvey, he beat Uriah Hall.
Yeah, I know.
He beat Ed Herman. Whereas with Jacare, I get that he's fought in the Chris Camozzi's of the world. He's kind of taken off some tune-up fights, but I just feel like he is an elite level guy. And his striking, maybe it's not world class, but he's a good enough counterpuncher that he can nail Brunson, because we saw that in the last fight. Brunson rushed forward and he got clipped. Now, if he's gonna fight B-level guys, he's gonna be able to rush them, he's gonna be able to clip them. But with Jacare, look at the Yoel Romero fight. He gets nailed with a spinning back fist. He's KO'd in the first round.
Yeah.
But he rallies. He wins rounds two and three. He ends up losing that fight somehow. But I thought he won the fight. And I think that's world class. That's elite. That's being able to overcome adversity, beat a guy, take a guy like Yoel Romero down, which Brunson did as well. But Brunson blew out his load in that fight, got finished in the third, whereas Jacare was able to keep going. So I think it's a close fight. The line pretty much dictates that. It's not like it's a blowout either side. But I feel like a lot of the money's starting to come in from in on Brunson, because people want that underdog. People want to get behind somebody. And he's kind of like the guy that everyone's kind of putting their hat on. But I don't know. I'm personally going to have to go with Jacare here.
All right. So as I said, it's not a star-laden card, but it's a real blue-collar card, a lunch pail card, and a violent card. And, you know, Dennis Bermudez is synonymous with violence, always entertaining fights with this guy. He stands in a phone booth and bangs. We're talking about a wrestler that doesn't wrestle, like a lot of these guys. He does once in a while, but for the most part, he wants to stand and get into a war. Similar situation when you look at the level of competition at Feely's face as opposed to Bermudez's face. The thing that catches my eye about this fight is the over 1.5. I think it's a little low. Bermudez isn't getting finished. I mean, you can hit this guy over the head with a metal chair 18 times, you know, with nails on it. You're not stopping him. I think the over's the play here, Cody. And I'm leaning with Bermudez as well, but I like the over 1.5.
I like the over too. Honestly, Andre Feely is a tough guy. But yeah, is he a finisher? He can get the finish, don't get me wrong. But yeah, Bermudez is a tough guy. I mean, traditionally, look at that fight with Jeremy Stephens, man. That's like the unheralded fight of the year. I mean, a great fight. It takes everything
that
to
fight
knock
he
Dennis
had with Matt Grice years ago.
Oh, that's a fight of the year candidate, man.
That's one of the best fights I've ever seen.
One of the best fights I've ever seen. But it literally takes a Jeremy Stephens third round flying knee to take this guy out. Like, he is very durable, don't get me wrong. But if I'm looking at the card, and I like most of these favorites, and I do like Bermudez, but if I'm going to take a play on a dog, I might be tempted to take a guy like Feely. I do like the over. The only thing with Feely is that he is young, he is getting better, and he trains in a room at Team Alpha Male with guys just like Dennis Bermudez. Literally the whole
gym. And the thing with Bermudez
is guys like Dennis Bermudez.
He's very hittable.
So hittable.
Like, he doesn't mind. Like, he will let you hit him.
Well,
so,
like you said,
he
wants to get in a phone booth and he wants to bang.
You've got a shot because he's going to say, hit me. Like, he's into it.
So
he's
for
like
that reasoning.
Chris Lieben almost.
For that reasoning, I mean, if the dog's going to come through, this is a shot where Andre Feely's not the worst play in the world.
I get it.
But I do like the over 1.5. I am
Bobby Green and Eric Koch is interesting. I brought this up earlier in the week with Lou. It's amazing. Time can be cruel to all of us, but it was about 5 years ago that Eric Koch was one of the 9-0 and him and Poirier collision course. And man, this Eric Koch guy from Milwaukee, he's going up there, man. Like, he was in the mix. He was one of these guys. Like, his life was. Now, hey, he's fighting at, 5:30 in the afternoon on a Saturday.
On the
prelims, the cold world. Against Bobby Green, who Bobby's very talented, skilled guy, tough as hell, this guy. But he talks more than he throws punches at times. Even when he's losing, he'll keep talking. I like Bobby Green when he's an underdog, cashed a couple of tickets years ago in Strikeforce era, et cetera. With Bobby Green, I know him. He's been on the show over the years. Who do you like in this fight? This is a freaking tough fight, man.
Yeah.
Can I trust to lay 60 cents on Bobby Green at minus 160 here? I think he wins, though.
Yeah, see, again, I think he wins.
I think Coke is kind of done, dude. I think, like, he mentally got his will broken.
Well, it's not only just that the fact that you, I mean, imagine being on the sidelines for as long as he has. That's going to mess with you. And you're just naturally getting older. I mean, this is the fight game. I mean, getting older is going to have its effect on you. But for him in particular, it's injuries. He's just always so injured. Now he decides, you know what? I can't make 45 anymore. I'm like the biggest 45er in the world. He goes up to 55, and he just hasn't had all that much success. But it seems to me like the key to beating him is just taking him down. And Bobby Green, even though he's an okay wrestler, doesn't really take guys down. He likes to clown around a little bit. Now, Coke's a lot bigger, and he's going to be able to play that range game. And because of that, I think it could be dazed. Because like you said, Bobby Green, he's lackadaisical. He'll hang it on the outside. He'll let you get some offense going. If he nails Coke, I have no doubt that he's going to be able to hurt Coke. I have no doubt that Bobby Green has the skill set to be able to beat Coke. But I just can't really get behind him as a favorite to physically go out there and want to dominate. His last fight's a draw. Maybe that's
a sour taste.
What about
the total of this one? This one's 2.5.
Yeah, I got the over on this, too.
It should go the distance.
Yeah, because Coke's a Rufus Sport kickboxer, and he does have a good kickboxing base, but he's not really much of a finisher. He does have some good finishes, but for the most part, not really a finisher. And when Bobby Green, it's like, oh, Bobby, he's hurt. But Bobby doesn't rush in for the kill. He never rushes
you're right.
In for the
kill.
He just kind
of there's going to be a lot of this in this fight. And Coke, with the kicks and back.
Of course.
Because Coke knows, too. I'm getting older. I don't want to get clipped by
him. He doesn't want to get hit.
Because normally when you bet over, you're like, I think a fight. You want him rolling around and up against the cage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there's certain guys, you know, he's going to hold him and he's going to eat 40 seconds there. These guys, but it'll be a lot of an active sparring session.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? An active sparring session.
And with Coke, there also is the element that because he doesn't want to get hit and he is a bigger guy, maybe he's just going to lean on him up against the cage. He might try that game plan as well. So I think there is going to be some stall tactics. I do think that the over is probably going to hit.
I'm all over the over. One. So basically, guys, if there's a lot of like flash knockouts, you know Morenci's in trouble. Just picking me Saturday night. Like, and another first round knockout. I'm going to be like, oh.
Well, Bobby Green's last fight, and I had the over. He gets flash knocked down, but he pops back up from the dead. And by the way, that fight hits the over.
All right, so we got Bellator tonight. I don't know. Oh God, after last week, am I really going to subject myself to this? Although the Lima Rory fight was great.
Chael Sonnen, I called that one big time. I says, listen, he's going to get the decision over Rampage. Plus 165, 225 by decision. All in, baby.
I tell you what, they got to make a new doll of Rampage because his stomach, he doesn't look like this anymore, man.
He weighed in like the same as Francis Ngannou. Think about that. He weighed 253. That's crazy. And he had some abs. He's better shape than I am. But he's so big. It was like ridiculous.
It was just the way he got taken down. It's like, and it was just like, and then he was just screwed. Like he was like tired. Like,
well, that was the thing. I had some worries that Chael would, it'd be hard for Chael to get him down. But the second that he did get him down, I knew Rampage wasn't getting back up. How's he going to get back up? If there was no man holding him down, he was still not going to get back up.
We got massive, we got some fights tonight. Bellator, what's your take on this card?
Lorenz Larkin's looked terrible in Bellator. I mean, not terrible. He's had a tough go. He's fought Lima, which was a competitive fight that he didn't get the nod in. And then the fight with Paul Daly, he started off well and then got absolutely starched. But I got to think here he's going to be able to get back on track. I honestly really like Fernando Gonzalez. Fernando Gonzalez's last fight made some good money off it. But literally, I was sweating because he loses the first round.
Bellator, you and I talk about all the
time. He's slow and unathletic.
This is a shady company where you really want to lay 380 with Larkin.
Well, no, that's the thing. But with Fernando here is that he's a slow starter and he's going to have to get some momentum going in the later round. And this is a 3-round fight. He's not going to have enough time. His last time out, he ends up getting a guillotine in the third round. I just don't see that happening. They want Larkin to win, too.
Yeah.
Larkin is just way faster, way more athletic.
Sadawad, -225 against J.J. Ambrose.
Yeah, J.J. Ambrose has got an awesome-looking record, but mostly he fights cans out in Thailand. I mean, he does the whole Singapore card. He fights a lot of out in Southeast Asia, whereas Sadawad is just perennially he's undervalued. Now, here he's -220 or something. That's not great value on him, but all the same, Sadawad fights well in Bellator. He's fought a large majority of his career there. He's fought some of the better guys, and he has actually had a lot of success. Whereas J.J. Ambrose, when he comes stateside, and he's also fought for Bellator before and just looked terrible, this is where he struggles. He wins when he's in Asia, beating up guys that maybe don't know what they're doing. When he comes over here, he struggles big time. And, yeah, I mean, he's been competing in Australia's last number of fights. I think Awad gets the job done.
All right, we've only got about 30 seconds here. It's amazing. I was just talking about the old days of the UFC earlier in the week, and I brought up Kendall Grove. Again, here's Kendall Grove still around. But as McCormick pointed out, he did start fighting extremely young, this guy. Nice guy, Kendall Grove, actually. Fighting A.J. Matthews tonight, Kendall Grove's like a minus 170 favorite or so, minus 180.
Yeah, if it was even money, I'd be tempted to go with Grove. The only thing with Grove is that he's been KO'd a number of times in his career, and the guy's like 6'6", right? He's so tall that if you find the chin, you're going to hurt him. A.J. Matthews is he's a front runner. He'll start off pretty good and then fall apart. He's 8-7 as a professional. His last number of fights have not looked good, but if anything, this guy's got a lot of power. So I am just a little bit nervous that if Kendall Grove doesn't mind his P's and Q's and doesn't play that range game, think about this for Kendall Grove. For a guy that's that tall and rangy, he just doesn't fight like a tall fighter. He fights like a guy that's trying to brawl with you and get clipped. So I'm a little bit worried.
Stefan Struve.
Stefan Struve's a great example.
7 foot guy that like, he's closer to lap dance. If I was his trainer, back up, Stefan, back up. We got to get out of here. We'll come back with the plays of the day. What up, everybody? I am Gabriel Morenci. It's time for our best bets of the day. Let's start off in the National Basketball Association with the Charlotte Hornets. Listen, the Hornets have been a disappointment this year. They've had a lot of injuries. They've definitely underachieved. But one thing that they have done, they bounced back after a loss. And in fact, the last six times the Charlotte Hornets have lost a basketball game, they've won the next game. I like them tonight in a very winnable game. Moneyline parlay, baby, with the Toronto Raptors. The Utah Jazz are a terrible road team. Yeah, I know they won earlier in the week against Detroit, but they're not going to beat the Raptors this evening. Moneyline parlay, minus 147. The Cleveland Cavaliers are 2-17 against the spread in their last 19 games. Yeah, it's dangerous. I know it's only 6 points, but you have to do it. You can't. You don't have a choice. You got to take the Pacers. Give me the Pacers, +6. They've already beaten them a couple of times this year, too. Give me the +6. Pacers, Cavs. We know the Cavs can't stop anybody. Let's go over 223. Give me the Pelicans, man. Pelicans are red hot right now. Won 6 of their last 7 basketball games. You know what? The Pelicans are 10-1 against the spread this year, guys, as division underdogs on their home court, all right? And actually, as a whole, division dogs, 10-1. So we're going to take them +5, Rockets and Pelicans over 227. And speaking of overs, the New York Knicks have played 9 straight overs. They're an ATM over machine. Sailed over the number last night. Fair number here, 217 with the Suns. Let's go over the number. Some college basketball. What can Brown do for you? I don't know. Hopefully they can win for me in a Moneyline parlay with Riders on the Storm. Into this house we're born. Riders on the Storm. Only old people know that. Northern Kentucky and Seattle. That's right. We're getting, it's that type of night. It's like Krusty the Clown. All right, I got some funny words for you here. Cucamonga, Seattle. Seattle. Northern Kentucky, Seattle. Moneyline parlay, minus 107. And Oakland and Northern Kentucky over 157 on a highbrow night tonight. May the winners be yours.